not about the destination. It was entirely about the journey itself. They were with Jesus. The disciples recognized that Jesus changed the atmosphere everywhere he was present, no exceptions. Whether he was alone with the 12, spending time with individual disciples one-on-one, or standing before thousands, he brought the tangible presence of heaven to earth. He lived the manifestation of the kind of prayer he taught them to pray, on earth as it is in heaven, Matthew 6, verse 10. And the presence of God, the Holy Spirit, was released whenever he spoke. The John 6:63 principle was at work. It is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh profits nothing. The words that I speak to you are spirit, and they are life. The disciples watched Jesus model what he told them so clearly. I only say what I hear my Father say. I only do what I see my Father do. See, for example, John 5:19. Whether they understood this concept or not, they felt it. It marked them. Jesus' words became spirit and life. His words released his presence, and that presence was a life-giving force that changed everything. A front row seat. Imagine being in crowds where everyone is pushing and shoving to get close to Jesus, and yet you have the privilege of being within arm's reach of him at almost any time of the day or night because he chose you. The disciples' sense of personal significance could never have been higher than at that time. But neither do I think they would have had the notion that they somehow had earned or deserved this opportunity. It was so far above what any person who had ever lived had experienced. That included their heroes like Moses, David, and Isaiah. There was little chance of self-aggrandizement because they had lived with the consciousness of the grace they had been given. And then imagine beholding miracles that had never been seen before by anyone. The disciples had a front row seat to the miraculous, heaven's invasion of earth, which operates outside of human logic and reason. That front row seat gave them a chance to watch both the effect of such miracles on the people receiving them and the destiny of their entire family lines altered through one touch or one word from Jesus. It must have been exceedingly wonderful, mind-boggling, and above all, inviting. And as if that weren't enough, the Master then equipped them to do the same. Yes, to do the same astounding miracles and deliverances they saw come from him. They must have been overwhelmed by the fact that their personal story in ministry had already involved seeing the hand of God manifest in miraculous ways. But the acceleration they were now experiencing, which included their own unqualified participation in the working of miracles, must have stretched their imaginations to the breaking point. What they didn't know, they knew. The apostles' normal life activities of fishing, dealing with public officials, following a religious routine had all lost their luster. Something had been awakened in them that would never have been satisfied by anything other than the Jesus way of life. The Spirit of God resting upon the Son of Man had forever transformed everything. Only Judas Iscariot, who never dealt with the issue he had brought with him into his relationship with Jesus, the love of money, couldn't see beyond the immediate benefit or cost of following the One. Jesus was a movement in himself. He hosted the Spirit of God in a way that no king, prophet, or priest had done before him. The crowds were overwhelmed by his miraculous works, displayed as the ultimate revelation of the Father's heart for his creation. And they were stunned by Jesus' words, confessing they had never heard anything like them. For he taught them as one having authority, Matthew 7:29. It became obvious to them all that other voices spoke without authority. Those voices were just noise, ideas, ineffectual commands. There was no life-changing power in them. The contrast between what the people were now hearing and what they had heard for their entire lives was stunning. The disciples learned by experience